Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lorac. Well, coming up today, nobody was more disappointed in the outcome of the presidential election, as it became almost final yesterday, than the QAnon people. And we're going to talk about that conspiracy theory in just a moment. But first, two listener comments about yesterday's program. Yesterday, one of the callers brought up the issue of religion, and here's how two other callers responded.
Hi. Near the end of Monday's show, it kind of turned into a theology show with several people professing that they understand the God of the universe as presented in the Bible. And it is very strange that Jesus constantly said that the rich people in the world were some of the only ones he disdained and who would suffer, you know, deservedly. He said it was easier for a camel to make it through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. How anyone who claims to be a Christian could support Donald Trump is pretty insane. But the bigger question is, if people really believe that there's a loving, wise, all-powerful God who will arrange things for our benefit, well, why doesn't that God arrange those things? Where was that God during the Holocaust? Where has that God been during the coronavirus pandemic? If that is a loving God, I would say that one has to question what kind of love it is. Seems a bit more of an abusive God than anything else.
This is Mary Ann. I compare Trump to the King Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel in chapter 4. I'm hoping that everybody reads it. Nebuchadnezzar was a very proud king, kind of like Trump. And one day, you know, he stood, the Bible said in chapter 4, verse 3, the king spake and said, it is not this great Babylon that I have built. And while he was speaking, he was driven out from his palace into the field with the animals. And he ate animals' food, grass, for 7 long years until God allowed him to return back to his palace. And I compare him to Trump. Trump is very proud and arrogant, and we'll see what happens.
Well, there you have a couple of listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. You're always welcome to comment, too, by writing to us at dj@wmnf.org. Well, if you go to a Trump rally or have been to a Trump rally, you know that one of the groups that always shows up is the QAnon group, a group that believes in a conspiracy theory. The conspiracy theory movement began in October of 2017 when a prophet began to post Q drops on the internet predicting what was going to happen. And the one of the predictions was is that President Trump would round up and arrest members of the deep state. With the announcement yesterday that the Trump administration is now cooperating with the incoming Biden administration, the hopes of the QAnon movement have really dropped. The massive arrests that they had hoped for are not going to happen. So yesterday I spoke with Karim Zidane, who writes for The Guardian newspaper, and he also writes for Right Wing Watch, which is a website that looks at far-right groups. And his most recent piece for Right Wing Watch is called "Is the QAnon Fantasy Unraveling?" I spoke with him yesterday, and here's that interview. Karim Zidane, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Rob. It's a pleasure to be on.
On election night, what were the QAnon supporters thinking was going to happen?
Well, it's fair to say, I think, that QAnon supporters had been really anticipating their day of reckoning finally coming through. And they expected truly that as Trump was, as they thought, would get reelected, so would all their wildest fantasies come true about all the QAnon drops and the Q drops that have been coming out over the past 6 months to year to 2 years as they've continued to develop, saying that finally the time is going to come for us to arrest this cabal of pedophiles and all these elite liberals are going to go to jail or be executed, etc. That's kind of the day of reckoning they were anticipating. And I mean, for them, unfortunately, on election night, things really changed dramatically. And as Joe Biden himself was announced as president-elect a few days later, that was a legitimate body blow to the movement.
And when you say body blow, did this emerge on QAnon websites? I mean, did they express disbelief or anger or, you know, some sort of other emotion?
I'd say the immediate reaction from many adherents was confusion, which quickly turned to desperation. So there was a sense that have we been wrong this whole time, or at least from some, have we been wrong this whole time? What's going on? Has Q lied to us, for instance? Things along those lines were the immediate reaction. But as time went on, as information about and conspiracy started rolling about, you know, election fraud and voter fraud, and we're talking things from Sharpiegate onwards, it sort of breathed new life into QAnon, and they started migrating toward all these other conspiracies as sort of a last-ditch hope in an attempt at desperation, just to say, well, you know what, maybe this is also part of, you know, the deep state fighting against us. This was always going to be a harder fight than usual. And you actually ended up having some of the bigger QAnon accounts coming out as sort of makeshift therapist thing. People understand that this was always going to be a hard fight. This was never going to be simple. This is going to take some time. Don't give up now. Hold steady. Hold fast. The truth will come out eventually. There was a lot of that sort of motivational speaking coming from the prominent QAnon accounts. And I say prominent QAnon accounts because Q himself had disappeared. His last drop came on election day. And then for a period of 9 to 10 days, has gone completely silent, which, as you can imagine, when the QAnon adherents are so used to these drops and having riddles to decipher and having sort of their fearless leader backing them up and backing up all their wildest fantasies, when he suddenly disappears, it's a cause for alarm for some of them, especially when he disappears at such a crucial time in the election.
What is QAnon's main avenue for getting the word out? What's the website, or what channel does it use?
Well, QAnon first started on 4chan back in about October 2017, and that's generally where the Q figure, this anonymous poster with claiming Q clearance, started gaining this this massive following. But from 4chan, they moved to 8chan, and 8chan obviously later became 8kun, and that's mainly where the Q drops are. But now, I have to say, this has become so mainstream in many ways that there are actually applications out there and websites specifically created just sort of have an RSS feed of Q drops. So you don't even have to go into these really, really awful cesspools on the internet to find Q drops anymore. You really, these ones will emerge. There used to be an iPhone application a while back, and the App Store removed it as well. So it's becoming easier and easier to access those drops in general.
Now, 8kun is owned by a man named Jim Watkins.
Yes.
Is there any indication that he himself might be Q?
Well, that's one of the big discussion points that people have been, different journalists, different reporters have brought up. The truth is, we don't know for sure. It is under. Here's what we do know. We knew that Jim Atkins and his son Rob, at least two of the only human beings who can truly verify Q's posts. Sometimes he posts on their network, identifying a lot of their fake posts and determine what is a fake post and what isn't a fake post. So that places them definitely in a significant position of power. And they have information likely that nobody else does. Does that make them Q themselves? I mean, at this point, it's anyone's guess. It's very possible, but at the same time, we don't have the proof to do that reporting just yet.
Well, our guest is Karim Zidane, who is a writer. He's written a piece for Right Wing Watch called Is the QAnon Fantasy Unraveling? And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Karim, we lost a little bit of what you said. We heard most of it, but could you start at the beginning about QAnon? Why do so many people watch or pay attention to QAnon? What's it all about?
Well, QAnon, really, at the end of the day, is just an anonymous poster who goes by Q, who had this Q, claimed to have Q clearance, which grants him status and access to classified information at the Department of Energy in the United States. Now, this information, according to him, includes nuclear secrets. So this sort of, internet legitimacy that was handed to him helped him amass this large following through his posts, the posts are known as Q drops, and the movement quickly grew in right-wing circles. It started in this like dark cesspool of the internet, being 4chan and then 8chan, but slowly started getting legitimized. And as you started hearing more, let's say, mainstream Republicans and mainstream conservatives actually mentioning QAnon and talking about how he was potentially a patriot, well, it started to grow. And then from there, the conspiracy started to widen. The QAnon in general, being the adherence to Q, started, it morphed the thing into an entire virtual cult, really. So there started to be claims that there was a cabal of elite pedophiles that made up of both actors, Democrats, and you know, high-ranking officials, and they were all part of this global child trafficking sex ring. So this unfounded conspiracy theory also placed Donald Trump, the outgoing president now, as the person who was going to be the sort of the savior for QAnon, and the person who was going to eliminate this cabal of elite pedophiles. And this day of reckoning that was being planned and that they believed that Donald Trump was going to be behind was known as the storm, which is why you always see QAnon adherents talking about the storm and the day of reckoning. And those are the terms that they love talking about, which is why Election Day was so important. They viewed this election as the day of reckoning to them. This was the day where once Trump secured his second term in office, he would suddenly go on this rampage of getting rid of this entire cabal and thus also dismantling the deep state in the United States, or the supposed deep state in the United States.
And this day of reckoning would involve mass arrests of Democrats and Hollywood types and liberals. They look forward to this day where all these people are rounded up.
Oh, absolutely. And here's the interesting thing. They already believe that some have been rounded up. One of the earliest conspiracies as part of QAnon was that Hillary Clinton herself had already been arrested and that she was at Guantanamo Bay. And then when she started appearing in public, they changed the conspiracy theory a bit and said, no, she's actually wearing an ankle bracelet and she's under house arrest. And then they moved that forward saying, no, actually, you know what? It must be a clone of Hillary Clinton. So as you can see, these are unhinged individuals. And once they lapse into the form of illogical explanations of things, it's very hard to, you know, make sense of it all. Because no matter what changes and no matter what happens to disprove their conspiracy theory, they're always going to have some sort of answer. And that's really the troubling part about all this, is because Q has been wrong on so many occasions. It's actually extremely rare that he would be right about something that wasn't ambiguous entirely. It's very much like a horoscope in many ways. But no matter what, no matter how wrong he often is, they continue to believe in all this, and that's happening right now. Q himself was the one who said the day of reckoning is upon us, leading into the election. And yet, with all that's happening right now, there is still millions of QAnon adherents who desperately are clinging on to this and now going after claims of election fraud, etc. So that's the real problem with this conspiracy theory. It's so hard to de-radicalize the people who have been invested into it.
Q was wrong before. In a previous election in 2018, he predicted the Republicans would win big. They didn't.
Absolutely.
That was not a setback, though, for belief in the conspiracy theory.
Not even a little bit. And there are articles have been written, and I believe The Guardian has done some, etc., about how QAnon has torn apart families. And that's something we shouldn't take lightly, in that there are people who sacrificed, you know, their families, their friendships, their jobs, their livelihoods in many ways, because of how much they believed in QAnon. So these Anons, these adherents, these believers now, who wholeheartedly supported this baseless conspiracy theory and are watching it disintegrate before their eyes, they're the ones who are really clinging on to this idea that Q is a harbinger of light and that, you know, the forces of evil are going to be stopped. So to them, they've sacrificed so much and they've sacrificed their loved ones that they have little alternative but to double down right now, which is what we're seeing happen. We're seeing QAnon adherents really double down on the conspiracy theory, really joining forces with all these other far-right campaigns, from Stop the Steal to the MAGA March that happened, etc., really double down on the election fraud conspiracies. All that, QAnon adherents have now moved. They used to see themselves as a separate corner of the internet that was enlightened and had information and understanding of the world and of the United States that nobody else had. Now they're more than happy to tag along with the more mainstream far-right groups, just in any sort of semblance of hope that this would continue for them.
Did they believe that John F. Kennedy Jr. did not die in the plane crash?
Yes, and that he's alive and taking pictures with them. And what's incredible is the person that they selected to be John F. Kennedy Jr. is perfectly fine with this. You'll find him at rallies, et cetera, just taking pictures with QAnon people, just happily taking pictures. I believe even, of course, one of the most famous QAnon adherents right now is Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. And I believe she even had a picture taken with him. So really, he's one of the most like famous faces right now of QAnon.
And do we know who he really is? I mean, obviously, John F. Kennedy Jr. died tragically. His body was recovered. So who is the person pretending to be JFK Jr.?
Quite honestly, I am personally not sure of this. It was just the phenomenon I've been seeing happening on the internet, and I've been seeing the pictures, but I'm not quite aware of the person's name.
Okay.
And who his true identity is at the moment.
You mentioned 8chan or 8kun as being a cesspool. Well, who else uses this message board besides QAnon?
Unfortunately, 8chan was the source where several terrorist manifestos appeared online. And a great example of that, and a very unfortunate, obviously, example as well, was the Christchurch attack in New Zealand. The attacker himself, the terrorist who was involved in that, posted and published his manifesto on 8chan beforehand. And that was part of the... When three of those incidents occurred on 8chan, it was enough to really pressure the site to go down for a few months, so it disappeared for a few months and then rebranded itself as 8kun. It remains a cesspool on the internet and one of the most disgusting places on the internet. So you can always expect that there will be terrorists of some sort or of that ilk, extremists, let's put it that way, far-right groups, QAnon adherents, they all participate on these forums and on these message boards.
Our guest is Kareem Zidan. He writes for Right Wing Watch and The Guardian, and he's been covering QAnon. This is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. So Major Patriot, which is a Twitter account belonging to a QAnon supporter, is telling people, don't give up. They're saying Trump is won, don't give up. What's the significance of that? And tell us a little bit more about what Major Patriot is saying.
Well, what he's really saying, he's one of those big QAnon accounts that's still available on Twitter, despite all the Twitter and Facebook's attempt to remove a lot of these accounts and to banish them from mainstream social media networks. Of course, some continue to thrive, and Major Patriot is one of them. So he was one of the early ones in the immediate aftermath of the election who came out telling QAnon adherents, do not give up, the fight is still going on, we are going to win this. Because, of course, he, like many, sensed the concern and the desperation that was rising within the community. Q had disappeared. He had not given them any sort of reassurance, even though the election had not gone their way. There was no reassurance. So, of course, all these key figures within the space had to jump in and take matters into their own hands. Some, like Major Patriot, decided that the best thing that they could do was sort of rally the troops and assure everyone that everything was going as planned. That's something you hear a lot from QAnon adherents right now. This was always the plan. Trump plays five-dimensional chess. He's always five steps ahead of everybody. I mean, even when he went to play golf for those couple of days after the election, people viewed that, QAnon adherents viewed that as, you know, part of the plan, that he was so comfortable in his position that he was out playing golf. They will rationalize absolutely anything they see. They refuse to believe otherwise at this point.
So they believe that even though Trump's been defeated, he's going to eventually win this round.
Yes. They believe that the only reason he was defeated was because of deep state actors and because of election fraud that sort of is poisoning American society and American politics forever now. This is their whole concept about the deep state, that there are deep state actors, including, say, the FBI, the CIA, and even darker forces that are out there to protect American interests against those of the patriots, the ones that see themselves as patriots, being QAnon, etc., and meeting something called a globalist mentality, this sort of international conspiracy that's going on, sort of a modern Illuminati. So it gets really strange and really deep when you really think about these these conspiracy theories and what they're willing to believe.
So how many times have QAnon supporters been found either committing crimes or attempting to commit crimes in the last few years?
Oh, there's at this point, there's countless examples. There's countless examples. The most recent one, of course, in an attempt to commit a crime, Philadelphia officers arrested people who were targeting one of the voting centers during, like, this is, of course, right after election fraud and voter fraud claims started coming out. Two people who had sort of a decal on the car, on the back of the car with the QAnon logo being "Where we go one, we go all," very much the QAnon battle cry. That was found on the back of their car with other QAnon stickers in the car, and they were armed and waiting to go into the convention center, so where the voting was taking place. So it's very, very lucky that that was, because this is exactly what happens, right? You come to this level of desperation, and you think you're so close to victory, and then it's snatched from you by what you think is deep state actors. Well, at that point, you're willing to take any sort of action. And that's the really terrifying part when it comes to QAnon, because the FBI has labeled them a potential domestic terrorism threat. I think it's high time that people in general stop seeing them as just, you know, Looney Tunes, and start understanding that some of these people are legitimate threats to society.
They were part of the MAGA rally the weekend after, or the same weekend that President Trump was declared the loser. The crowd was in the thousands in Washington, D.C. Q wrote that weekend, nothing can stop what is coming, nothing. So Q really believes that that Trump will win the election.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why there were QAnon adherents were out there in the masses. And they had also helped spread the Stop the Steal campaign and promoted the Million MAGA March. Because, I mean, they still have channels. I mean, sure, they have been removed for the most part. Their biggest pages have been removed from Facebook and have been deactivated on Twitter. But that still leaves them access to things like Telegram. Of course, they have 4chan and 8kun. I mean, they still have a little bit of access on Twitter. They've got Parler now, BitChute, and the MeWe. So there's quite a variety of sort of alternative social networks that they're still able to use. So it doesn't end there. And because they've been so used to operating like this for several years, I mean, they really know how to use those channels well. Up until recently, if I'm not mistaken, Telegram has over 200, 300 or so QAnon account, like QAnon actual pages available there with thousands of users. And we're talking international pages as well. This isn't just limited to the United States or English-speaking even QAnon adherents. We're talking there are pages from the Netherlands, from Germany, from France. There are Latino ones. It's all over the place. And they're very good at sort of spreading that message, sharing each other's work, and passing that along. That's what makes them so dangerous. So when they took on this Million MAGA March, some of them, all the QAnon people suddenly got behind it. So when you have one account like Major Patriot, for instance, who has 500-something followers, 500-something thousand followers, that's a lot of people who suddenly get the message immediately. And then you send that to 400 different groups and you put that on the on 8kun, et cetera. There's going to be a lot of people who are going to pick that up. Hmm. So, yeah, they're still very good and very useful to the far right. So they won't be shunned by the far right or by, you know, Republicans who are willing to buy into the message to some extent, or at least to manipulate these adherents to their own gain.
If there are so many, I mean, there's a lot of right-wing conspiracy, or at least right-wing sites on Facebook and Twitter. Why did Facebook and Twitter decide to take aim at QAnon? What line did they cross? What line did QAnon cross?
Well, I think it was once there were certain attacks that occurred, and it became much more of a mainstream topic. The truth is that for QAnon has existed since October 2017, but it was only in the last, say, 6 to 8 months that the mainstream media really took it seriously. And it was once there was a bombardment of articles on the New York Times, on the Guardian, on all sorts of, you know, the Washington Post, etc., all the major news and most respected newspapers and outlets that exist in the Western world, once they took aim at QAnon, and once the FBI as well put out its statement saying there was a potential domestic terrorism threat, well, pressure was applied to leading social media outlets, because what did those articles also say? Those articles said that Facebook, Twitter, and you know, all these different social media networks were part of the problem, because they allowed this information to spread. They allowed this propaganda and this disinformation to continue to thrive in these communities and for these groups to grow. Without, had Facebook and Twitter taking action years ago, I'm talking maybe early 2018, we might not be dealing with a problem of this size right now. We truly might not be. The fault lies with social media networks refusing, or at least not considering, the complete danger of just allowing this kind of information to perpetually cycle through their networks.
I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but let me ask it anyway. One of President Trump's lawyers until this weekend was Sidney Powell, who's challenging the outcome of the election. She was there at that famous press conference where Rudy Giuliani had the hair meltdown last week. She is a hardcore QAnon supporter, and my source on this is Vice.com. Have you reported on Sidney Powell and her support for the QAnon conspiracy theory?
I have not reported on Sidney Powell yet, though she does interest me, especially what's going on lately with the Trump campaign claiming she's not part of the legal team. What I find very, of course, interesting and how it links to what I've already written is the fact that QAnon adherents have immediately fallen in line with any sort of conservative or Republican opinion with regards to election fraud, etc. So they're viewing anybody on sort of front lines of this as a hero and as a patriot and as someone that they need to celebrate and need to help push that message. So, of course, Sidney Powell is one of the leading figures for them that they continue to sort of lionize.
Okay, and we're losing you, Kareem, so let me just ask you one last question. Is there anything else you'd like to point out about your reporting on QAnon that we haven't talked about?
I think that, I believe that the QAnon fantasy is unraveling slowly. This I do believe. But I do worry that all those radicalized human beings, once the unity within QAnon sort of evaporates, what is going to happen to all these radicalized individuals? Because it's not as simple as suddenly they go back to being normal. That just doesn't happen. What's going to happen is QAnon is going to splinter off into a wide range of conspiracy theories, etc. And a lot of people are going to go whichever way they want, to believe what they want, deep state theories specifically, reptilian Democrats theories, whatever they're going to choose to splinter off to. The key now is, and this is something I'd like to address in the future, is how do we go about de-radicalizing these human beings? Because what we have learned is simply calling people crazy and loonies and useless entities in society is not good enough. Because at the end of the day, they become threats to society, and they end up occupying a space that helps perpetuate more propaganda and disinformation. It's important that we find new ways to de-radicalize human beings.
And just to clarify, do some current QAnon adherents believe that Democrats are reptiles in disguise?
I was saying that there have been videos recently that have been posted on these networks. I've seen some on Telegram and I've seen some on 8chan as well, where there's videos of Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, how she actually... The video sort of shows a split second where her eyes switch, and of course it's Photoshop nonsense, right? But they don't believe that, and they say, of course, this is what proves she's a reptile and a shapeshifter. So there's a lot of that stuff going around. They also believe that any celebrity with black and white images right now on their profile has been executed by the deep state or has been arrested. So there's a lot of really crazy conspiracies going on.
Well, Kareem, I'm glad you're on the story. Your piece for Right Wing Watch is called Is the QAnon Fantasy Unraveling? And Kareem Zidane, thank you for coming on WMNF.
Oh, Rob, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
That's Kareem Zidane, who's on the West Coast. I spoke with him yesterday. He writes for Right Wing Watch, also for The Guardian, and he's written in the past for Foreign Policy magazine. And he wrote in his most recent piece, the one where he says QAnon is unraveling. He says Q's final drop before the election was on the morning of November 3rd and featured an Abraham Lincoln quote from 1863 in which the former president declared that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom. The drop also bore the image of an American flag and a YouTube link to the theme song of the 1992 film The Last of the Mohicans. The YouTube link was viewed by more than 35 million people and features more than 28,000 comments, mainly from loyal followers of QAnon, giving you some idea of the the depth of the reach of that conspiracy theory. Well, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. We mentioned Sidney Powell, the lawyer that was standing there with Rudy Giuliani last week, saying that the election was stolen, and she has tweeted, "The storm is coming," which is a phrase that is often used by QAnon supporters. She is a big QAnon adherent, and you can see that article at Vice.com. We'll post some articles about QAnon on our website later on today. And this interview, you can always listen back to it on our archives at WMNF.org. Well, let's open up the phone lines in a few minutes. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. A lot of people were disappointed by the outcome of the election. Here's a caller last week to the Rush Limbaugh radio show, just despondent over Joe Biden's win.
"Trump and you are all we have left, Rush. We've spent our lives voting for these people because they're not them. And we just can't do it anymore. No one stands for us, Rush. Only you and Donald Trump. God forbid, what do we have left? I love my president. I am not a revolutionary, Rush, but I will die for my president."
A despondent caller last week to the Rush Limbaugh radio show. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. If you want to comment, you can call us up, 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. There's some other stories I think we could also talk about, too. Millions of Americans expect to face eviction by the end of this year, adding to the suffering that's been inflicted by the coronavirus pandemic that's raging across the U.S. About 5.8 million adults say they are somewhat to very likely face eviction or foreclosure in the next 2 months, according to a survey completed November 9th by the U.S. Census Bureau. That accounts for a third of the 17.8 million adults in households that are behind on rent or mortgage payments. Roughly half of households not current on their rent or mortgage payments in Florida, Arkansas, and Nevada think there's a strong chance of eviction by early January. We're going to have to pay attention to that story. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Well, this year, one of the GOP victories in Florida came when Ileana Garcia, a co-founder of Latinas for Trump, defeated incumbent Democrat Jose Javier Rodriguez in a state Senate race in South Florida. It was a narrow victory, and Miami Herald journalists Samantha Gross and Anna Sabalos are reporting that Rodriguez has demanded an investigation of a third-party candidate in that race, Alex Rodriguez, who has the same last name as the incumbent. In that race, Alex Rodriguez, unrelated to Jose Javier Rodriguez, received more than 6,300 votes, which was a big deal given how close the race was. Garcia defeated Jose Javier Rodriguez by a mere 34 votes in that Florida Senate race. And there's been speculation that Alex Rodriguez, this third candidate, was planted as a spoiler to take away votes from the incumbent Democrat. According to Gross and Sabalos in the Miami Herald, Alex Rodriguez's candidacy appears to exist for only one reason, to suck votes away from incumbent Jose Javier Rodriguez. The incumbent lost by just 34 votes, and he's now calling for an investigation into Alex Rodriguez and whoever may have put him up to run. Here's a statement that was posted on the losing candidate's website. This is Jose Javier Rodriguez speaking yesterday.
"There are over 215,000 votes in this race. Garcia received the greatest number of those once all votes were counted. A third candidate, a straw candidate propped up by Republicans as part of their strategy, got 6,382 votes. Garcia is the choice of Senate District 37, is your next state senator, and I wish her well. I had the opportunity to tell her that in a brief phone conversation a few minutes ago. Nevertheless, democracy requires transparency. And in order to achieve that, I believe this election warrants a full investigation so that those who may have violated the law are held to account, and so that such tactics are not used in future elections. We cannot afford to have anything erode confidence in our election process. There may be those in Tallahassee who delight in this result. And if so, I will remind them that we are in a climate crisis, a pandemic, and an economic crisis inflicting pain on so many. And encourage them to take those challenges seriously. The people of District 37 deserve that.
Well, that's outgoing Florida Senator Jose Javier Rodriguez, who lost his race November 3rd to Jose Javier Rodriguez is a Democrat. He lost his race to a Republican in Miami-Dade County by 34 votes. And there was a three-way race there. And the other candidate got 6,300 votes in a race where there were about 200,000 votes cast. I think that's right. I'll have to check that again. But as you heard there, Jose Javier Rodriguez wants an investigation into the third candidate in that race, and CNN is reporting that a lot of dark money went into that race. Untraceable money. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Let's go to our callers. Roger's in Sarasota. Hey, Roger, you're on MNF. What's up?
Good morning.
Good morning. What's up?
I was thinking that the puppet master at the top of the QAnon dung heap is probably laughing his posterior off, watching all of the frantic desperation of the people he inspires. It's not unlike kicking the top off of a red ant pile and watching the little red ants just go crazy with fury. I mean, it's got to be good for a laugh. It's so preposterous. I don't know what else it could be.
Except in some cases, people are bent on breaking the law when they follow the conspiracy theory.
I'm not saying that the results aren't a danger to society, but I don't think the people who are orchestrating this could possibly believe everything they're putting out there. It's just too ludicrous.
Yeah, I think investigative reporters need to take a look at the website where most of this stuff is promulgated, and that's 8kun, and see if the folks that run that know anything more about who Q is. But thanks a lot, Roger. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
All right. Good to hear from you. Let's go to Rob in Thanota, Sassa. Hey, Rob, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Oh, hey, Rob. Your guest was excellent. We've talked about this before, and I like the fact that he points out how, you know, once someone goes down to this into that rabbit hole of the whole 4chan, 8chan world, you know, the alternate universes people inhabit, they're so committed to it that, you know, and as I've told you, I have a friend who's into this stuff, and it's like then they have to double down because it's not like, well, I supported Hillary Clinton and she lost. Well, that sucks. Let's go have a beer. I mean, they become so identified personally with these beliefs, and they're so rabid. Like that poor fellow. I mean, I feel sorry for that guy on the Rush Limbaugh show because you can hear in his voice he really believes all this. You know, he thinks Trump is some hero. Some beacon of light. I mean, once you commit to that so deeply, you can't just turn around and say, oh, I backed the wrong horse, or, you know.
Yeah, because it's got to be frightening if you believe that everybody on the other side is part of a pedophile conspiracy,
right,
and they're all working together and they're able to orchestrate, voting fraud in 8 states or 9 states. I mean, that's a pretty powerful conspiracy. You've got to feel powerless if you really buy into the conspiracy theory.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When the others, and you know what your guest said, I think the guy's name is David Icke. He passed away. He's a writer who kind of he wrote all these books about the reptilians, you know, and it's a great idea to make money because you basically write science fiction and then you just posit it as the truth. And I think, that's a cottage industry in itself, like a lot of other Bigfoot or whatever, but people believe it. And, I don't know what the remedy is. It's really like a cult. I mean, the fact that people are losing friends and family members, you know, I have to walk on eggshells around this fella, you know, that I love deeply. He's a great guy. I've known him all my life, but I have to walk on eggshells.
Have to go. Let's go to Gary in Dunedin. Gary, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, yeah, great interview. So
we have to wonder, how can people be susceptible to what we rational people see are crazy, often violent conspiracy theories? Well, there is an easy answer. It is that, especially the American mind right now, part of it, part of our populace, they're hacked from an early age by religion, which teaches you to believe in irrational things, a polarized worldview, good versus evil. My team, the evangelical apocalyptic Christian team, is the good team. The other team are devil worshippers, pedophiles, pagans, lesbians, etc. And you'll see direct connections and parallels between QAnon theology and evangelical right-wing theology. They both believe there's an end times.
Yeah, but Gary, not everybody who's religious grows up in that kind of like rigid belief system. I mean, some people grow up in religion, and that religion allows them to also accept science. I mean, just because you're religious doesn't mean that you're that you're susceptible to this.
Well, that's very nice if you find people who can handle the cognitive dissonance of believing in an invisible sky father who floods the whole world and murders his own son, while at the same time believing in science. But the origins of why people believed Jim Jones and others is that from an early age, along with Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy, and the Easter Bunny, people are taught not to be rational. And once you've taught them to believe bizarre, insane, weird things, you can hook them onto any kind of craziness, including the idea that Trump is a hero and that QAnon is correct.
All right, Gary, thanks. Thanks for your thoughts. 813-239-9663. John writes this. He's in Port Rich. He says, I would like to ask your guest if he has any examples of talk show hosts like Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, or Mark Levin using the false claims by QAnon on their shows. I do not know. I don't know if anybody studied that. John, thanks for the question. 813-239-9663. Ted in Elfers writes, I'm pretty sure Donald Trump is Q. No, I don't think so. I think it takes a pretty sophisticated either sense of humor or sense of I don't think that President Trump is Q. But thanks a lot for that, Ted. And I'm sure you meant that in jest. Let's go to Neil in St. Pete. Hey, Neil, you're on M&F. What's up?
Morning, Rob. Since it's Thanksgiving, I'd just like to talk about the hunger situation for a second.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, normally every Thanksgiving I'll donate like a big ham and a big turkey, but, you know, the way things are this year, I just can't afford to do it. But, you know, you've got Bezos and Buffett and these Walmart family members. I'm curious if they've, like, donated $50 million each to the food banks in this country, because that's, like, the least they can do. And for people, if you can afford to go out there tomorrow and just bring some food to any of the shelters or any of the organizations that are going to be feeding people on Thanksgiving, please do it if you can today or tomorrow.
Absolutely. All right, Neil, thanks a lot. We had a guest on yesterday who said that 1 in 4 children here in the Tampa Bay area is hunger insecure. 1 in 4 children is hunger insecure. And she was from Feeding Tampa Bay, which is one of the great charities. There's a lot of good charities. There's the Free Clinic in St. Petersburg. There's Metropolitan Ministries. Yes, please donate. Hunger is a huge problem, not just now, but it's a huge problem all times of year. And Neil, thanks. Thanks for the thoughts. Let's go to Fran in Largo. Hey, Fran, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Oh, thank you, Rob. Listening to that guy spouting off to Rush Limbaugh, it made me think that in reality, if Rush Limbaugh personally saw this guy, I don't think he'd want anything to do with him. I think he'd be afraid. He wouldn't say, oh, let me put my arm around you, buddy, and let's go have a beer or let's go have dinner together. I think Rush Limbaugh would run the other way or call the police or have his bodyguard sticked on him. For that matter, I think Trump would too. These people have to realize that they are just being used by these con men, charlatans. That's, you know, that comes through loud and clear to me. It's sad that these people believe in these in these fakers, but that's the way of the world.
Okay, Fran, thanks a lot. You know, to Fran's point, there are a number of conservatives that have come forward now apologizing for what they've done because, you know, if you've been around for a while, you know that going back to the Reagan years, conservatives have vilified liberals and progressives and people on the left. Charles Koch has just done an interview, and I think it's on the Axios website. Charles Koch, famously of the Koch brothers, he did the interview from his home in Wichita, and he has really apologized for the kind of extremism that he's put out there, and he's still doing it. He's still funding far-right groups here in the U.S., but in this interview, he's apologized because he realizes the end point here has really torn the country apart. 813-239-9663. And let's go to Michelle, who's in Newport Richey. Hi, Michelle. Thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. My thoughts on this, I missed the interview, unfortunately, but, you know, I look at how we got to this point, and I find it fascinating, really. And I look at, like, reality TV shows and things that just when people just need that escape from their own lives, whatever it may be. I'm not speaking for the end of the mass, but when I look at everybody trying to escape from their reality, and I wonder how this fits into that narrative.
How everybody's trying to escape. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think one of the things, and CBS just put out a documentary today, and you can see it for free on the CBS website, is that it is a complicated world, and people are looking for easy solutions, and they're also looking for the bad guys. And so it's easy to paint Hollywood activists or Hollywood actors, rather, and Democrats as part of this vast conspiracy that involves pedophilia, just a crazy conspiracy, because people are so angry, and they I think in part, because life in the U.S. is pretty hard, and we're always in debt. It seems like we never climb out of debt. Medicine is expensive. Dental care is expensive. We've got all these problems here. We're always shelling out money to these giant corporations, but instead of being angry at the giant corporations, they're trying to steer us so that we're angry at Hollywood or angry at Democrats. But I think life is hard in part because we don't organize our society in a way that makes it easier. This is the richest country in the world. It could be a lot easier. But Michelle, thanks a lot.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. Let's go to Deborah in Lutz. Hey, Deborah, you're on M&F. What's up?
Hey, Rob. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
I have a friend on Facebook who has been involved with the QAnon conspiracy thing, and I'm really glad because I wouldn't know much about it if not for actually knowing somebody that's involved in all that stuff. And myself and a bunch of others are constantly arguing with him and trying to get him to see the light and why he hasn't kicked us off of his friends list. We don't know, but it's interesting. Your caller earlier, Gary, made some good points. I'm not as anti-religion as he might be. I'm more interested in the mechanics of how all of this has happened. But if you study the Cambridge Analytica scandal, and that was where Facebook allowed these data mining companies to have access to all of our profile information, you wonder how were these people, like those that follow QAnon, how were they targeted? Because they definitely were targeted. How did they know to send these people all of these conspiracy memes? And it was through analytics, analyzing the data on what's on your profile. But from that, what they learned, and this is why I mentioned what Gary was talking about with religion, what they learned is that there were two main groups, categories of people that they chose to target, and one were religious people, Christian conservatives to be specific, and military veterans. And the gentleman that I mentioned that is involved in this QAnon, he is both. And I'm a retired military officer. So I can tell you that I can understand how they would conclude that veterans specifically would be amenable to looking at these things and get sucked in, because we are trained as military people to not question authority, not question anything. Sir, yes, sir. We used to have a saying that was, sir, yes, sir, three bags full, meaning, you know, you do what you're told, you think what you're told to think, et cetera. So I think if we're going to get past these things, we really have to dig into the technology on how it happened, and then we have to come up with some kind of solutions on how we're going to get a handle on this, because as your expert mentioned earlier, there are people that are so incensed by all of this stuff that has radicalized them that they are very dangerous people. They are domestic terrorists. Anyway, good show, Rob. I'll let you go.
Okay. Well, Deborah, thanks a lot. Thank you for that.
You bet.
All right. In that discussion I had with Gary a few minutes ago, I mean, I think there are more authoritarian types of religions where the preacher is the final authority, or, you know, the preacher's interpretation of the good book is the final authority. So I think Gary was, I didn't mean to disagree too much with him. I do think that there are people of good faith, though, in religions. And I think one of the problems that we've got in this country is that they don't have TV shows and they don't have radio shows. So, you know, it'd be nice to see a network where you've got more thoughtful religious people talking about the issues of the day. Let's go to Susan in Tarpon Springs. Hi, Susan. Thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, I missed part of that interview, unfortunately, but I wanted to say something about the whole cult idea. I'm a retired therapist, so from a mental health perspective, and it might help people understand a little bit more. Generally, in my experience, when somebody's involved in anything that is like a cult or is a cult, it's because they don't have a good sense of personal identity, and they tend to be insecure, and a group identity is something that helps them to feel more powerful. This is not always the case, of course, but it is a lot of times. And I think a lot of the people that are drawn to this whole idea of conspiracy theories, it helps them to feel stronger, more powerful, because they're identified with a group that has some type of a belief system. So it helps them to feel powerful kind of by being around them, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. Susan, how do people leave cults?
That is difficult, because I have worked in the past. I had clients that were caught up in cults and did have to leave. It is difficult because they're usually hounded, and sometimes in ways that people would not even expect is happening. I even was threatened because a client was getting out of a cult, and then they threatened me because I was her therapist. That was scary. I had to move because they knew where they found out where I lived. It can be done. People have done it. I think it's a matter of taking your voice back, taking your power back, learning that you don't have to believe what other people say and you don't have to mimic what they say just so that you can feel less afraid, because I think that's what it's about. I think it's about trying to find a way to live in the world where you're not so scared. And so people that are scared, there's power in numbers. When you are brave enough and you're strong enough to actually step out and say, this is who I am and this is what I think, and it doesn't matter what you think because I'm going by what my heart and my soul says, that helps you get out.
Okay, good advice. Thanks, Susan. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for letting me have a say there.
Of course. Let's go to Dan in Seminole. Dan, we just have 30 seconds. What would you like to say?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I really agree with your last caller. It was a great interview. I have a brother that's in QAnon, or not, I'd be actually in, but he believes it. And the question the talker was talking about at the end of the interview was that how to deal with these people. And I think that that's really important, especially in the spirit of Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I think we have to not view them as enemies, but try to figure out how to make sure that they're looking at all sides of the issue. Dan, thanks a lot. All right. Great to hear from you. Jeff writes this, I have looked at some QAnon material, and sometimes it appears as if they have an alliance with media such as Fox News. However, it seems that recently they have become a little disappointed with Fox News, writes Jeff. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. I'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Thanks for listening. Barbara Fling has been our phone producer today. I'm Rob Lurie. Stay tuned for the news. And then your hero, Mark Bureau, will be here in just 5 minutes, right after the NPR news. Here's the news.